Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, August 17, 2021. A military spokesman says the death toll from Monday's attack on the Juba Nimule Highway has risen to 5.
We found one sister dead, and then we found one person who was burning in the car. And we actually found the car was burning, and because we did not have all the facilities even to put the fire off, we could not rescue, and it was already actually dead. It was already burning just the body.
And a former senior SPLM-IO member says South Sudan's first vice president, Riek Machar, is not in control of his forces.
Our colleagues in Juba are only barely implementing Chapter 1, Transitional National Government of National Unity. This has been reduced even to ratios of power sharing.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The military spokesperson of the South Sudan People's Defense Force says 5 people died in Monday's attack on the Juba Nimule Road. The governor of Eastern Equatoria State, Louis Lobong, says one other Catholic nun died from her injuries. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino reports from Juba.
Governor Lobong says he had gone to attend the centenary celebrations of the Lower Catholic Parish along the Juba Nimule Road on Sunday, but decided to return on Monday because Lower is within Eastern Equatoria State and a short distance to return to Torit. Lobong says while on his way to Aro Junction on Monday, he received a call from someone who alerted him to the road ambush that occurred ahead of him involving a group of Catholic sisters. Lobong says he immediately instructed his driver to speed up in order to try to rescue the nuns. He says they arrived to a horrific scene.
We found one sister dead, and then we found one person who was burned in the car. We actually found the car was burning, and because we did not have all the facilities even to put the fire off, we could not rescue, and it was already actually dead. It was already burning just the body. And so 2 people on the spot died. Later there was another sister who was also wounded. She was rushed to the hospital, and later in the evening I heard that she also died.
Governor Lobong says he cannot confirm the identity of the attackers, but suspects they could be members of rebel groups like the National Salvation Front or another group that is not a signatory to the peace agreement. He says some suspects were caught by national security forces. Major General Lu Rai Kong, spokesperson for South Sudan People's Defense Force, says the travelers were ambushed at a place called Jebelin, where no security forces are deployed. Kong says, based on information from military officers who were at the crime scene, 5 people died in the attack. Kong says, through an intelligence group tasked with collecting information, he confirmed the attack was carried out by rebels with the National Salvation Front.
A total of 5 were killed in separate incidences at around 11 a.m. North rebels ambushed 2 vehicles. The first vehicle was ambushed at Salara village along Juba Nimule Road. In that ambush, a total of 3 women died, including 2 Catholic nuns. They were killed in a Noah car. In the second ambush, one person was burned inside the Primo car. And then the 5th person, that was about a border rider, he was knocked dead by a truck that was fleeing from the scene of the ambush.
Kong says, according to information from sources on the ground, no suspect was captured after the ambush, but he accused National Salvation Front, or NAS rebels, of carrying out the attack. NAS spokesperson Suba Samuel says the government often accuses the NAS of any attack because it has failed to provide security across the country and to arrest criminals who attack people along roads. He denies NAS attacked the people who were returning from the centenary celebration.
The road, first of all, has been fortified. The president and the vice president and all the government dignitaries went there, and the road was well fortified. You ask yourself the question, a well-fortified road, how can an outsider come and ambush if it is not something internal? So for us, we strongly believe this is still the government and the confused elements within who are doing all this.
Philip Aguirre, Assistant Professor of Peace, Development and Security Studies at the University of Juba, says yesterday's attack was the behavior of people who look like terrorists, because if it was not a simple robbery, the attackers would not have burnt a car with a person inside. Aguirre says the only way to avoid deadly attacks is to deploy more soldiers along the Juba Nimule Road.
The only thing to be done is a continuous and permanent patrolling on the road. All the vehicles that are moving along the road must have an escort. So escort plus permanent patrolling will resolve the issue. And then the government forces have to identify these criminals wherever they are so that they are brought to book.
Agwar says attacks along the road are frequent because it is the lifeline for nearly all commodities moving in and out of Juba. He says the attackers could also be sending negative messages, just wanting to deprive South Sudanese citizens of their rights. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
The former head of communications and public relations in the SPLM-IO, Mabior Garang, has joined the SPLM-IO splinter group led by General Simon Gatwich. Garang, who resigned from his position as Deputy Minister of Interior in the Transitional Government of National Unity last year, says the 2018 peace deal is not being implemented. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Mabior Garang, son of the late John Garang, who founded the SPLMA, said in an exclusive interview with this program that Riek Machar's leadership has lost track of the implementation of the peace deal, which created divided opinions within the SPLMA-IO, leading to the split within the party. He says the split within the party happened over values and objectives under which the SPLMA-IO party was founded.
Our colleagues in Juba are only barely implementing Chapter 1, Transitional National Government of National Unity. This has been reduced even to ratios of power sharing. Positions which are not even in the agreement are being shared. The Kitgwang Declaration is calling for the implementation of Chapter 2, ceasefire and transitional security arrangements. It is not a call to return to war.
Garang says while politicians in Juba are squabbling for jobs, the country's civil population is still languishing in refugee camps and internally displaced persons camps. He says rampant insecurity and intercommunal violence has engulfed the country, a reality which was not expected 3 years after the revitalized peace agreement was signed. Following the Kitgwang Declaration, Mabior Garang says the Gatwich SPLM-IO leadership is now working on how to ensure that security arrangements are fully implemented.
All those processes they're looking at reorganizing and seeing how we can implement the agreement through following the processes. IGAD has now intervened and we are going to soon begin to have talks to resolve the disputes through peaceful means.
The Kitgwang Declaration was announced August 4th at the SPLM-IO Sector 1 Command Base in Magenis or Kitgwang Boma of Manyu County, Upper Nile State, by the leadership of General Gatwich. It declared Machar was no longer the leader of the SPLM-IO and called for effective implementation of the peace deal, particularly its security arrangements. It warned of a collapse of the peace deal because it was not being fully implemented by the parties. Garang says the Kitgwang Declaration, which he supports, will recommit the leaders to implementing the peace deal. He says First Vice President Machar failed to adhere to the objectives and principles of the SPLM-IO to bring change to the country. Garang says all the country's economic security and governance reforms hinge on the effective implementation of the security arrangements.
Soldiers on all sides face the same hardships. What we want is the implementation of the security arrangements so that we can all go home and build our lives. So the issue is not really the leadership of Dr. Riek Machar. In addition to this, we believe that Dr. Riek Machar is not really in control in Juba. We believe he has been kidnapped by a mafia within our movement and is being politically extorted. We can no longer trust any letters coming from Juba signed by Dr. Riek Machar because the mafia controls his signature and they are fond of forging letters.
Garang says a lack of political will is not the only thing holding up implementation of the peace deal.
It is also mistrust because some of us are not honest about implementation of the agreement. So this brings suspicion between all the parties. We cannot blame the government alone. The provisions of the agreement represent the major problems ailing our nascent republic.
Garang describes the agreement as a good one if it were implemented in letter and spirit. Machar's faction has downplayed the Kitgwanga declaration, terming it illegal and a move led by peace spoilers. Late last week, Machar's SPLM-IO leadership terminated the membership of several party members who switched their allegiance to the Gatwich SPLM-IO faction. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Khartoum, where a body overseeing the implementation of the Juba Comprehensive Peace Agreement says the parties to the deal have done very little to abide by its time frame. The peace monitoring body says any delays in implementing the transitional security arrangement could threaten stability in parts of Sudan. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports.
The peace monitoring body released a report late last week saying over the past 9 months, the parties to the Juba peace agreement have not done enough to quickly implement the deal. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus, Sanusi Adam, the executive director for the peace monitoring body, says despite a signed agreement in place, intercommunal conflicts in Darfur region, eastern Sudan and the Kordofan region have escalated. He says the report found most Sudanese are not aware of what is in the peace agreement because the parties did not adequately educate the public about the agreement. He says citizens should be informed about the deal's content so they own it and become part of the implementation process and hold parties accountable.
Engaging the citizens and the people of all these affected regions in the process and in the operation would ensure that a healthy and healthy implementation into the peace agreement will ensure that people are part of the process. And one of the biggest things that are missing so far, which is supposed to start really as soon as the peace has been signed, which is the transitional justice.
The peace monitoring group, which is composed of 10 members of Sudanese civil society organizations, was launched in December 2020 after the Juba peace deal was signed in October between the transitional government and the armed groups. Adam says Sudanese civil society activists remain concerned about the slow pace of the deal's implementation. He says the peace monitoring body will continue to pressure the parties to fully implement the agreement.
They've been working on it, they've been talking about it, they've been passionately and actively trying to make sure that these all the articles and all the metrics on the peace agreement to be implemented in time.
Adam says any setback in implementing security arrangements will affect other provisions, including the political process. He called for an immediate establishment of the Joint Protection Force in Darfur to quell ongoing intercommunal conflicts in the region after the withdrawal of the Joint United Nations African Union peacekeeping mission last December.
They need to put aside their differences and work together to make sure there is peace, to make sure there is no setbacks that will take people back to war. And they need to start listening to their constituents, to their people.
Under the Juba peace agreement, the various forces are supposed to deploy 12,000 strong force in Darfur within 90 days to secure the area and provide protection for civilians. Last week, the head of Sudan's Sovereign Council, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, instructed the newly installed Darfur regional governor, Mini Arko Minawi, to immediately implement security arrangements. Addressing thousands of people gathered in Al-Fashir town of North Darfur state, al-Burhan said, quote, "We will never build peace if any of us is carrying our own firearms. We will only build peace among ourselves if all of us work for peace, love, brotherly spirit, and respect for all," end quote. Adam is calling on Sudan's friends to stand with Sudanese parties and ensure that the Juba peace agreement is fully implemented.
The international community, I think, needs to interject and divert some resources and guidance towards certain articles in the GPA so that a so that the peace would be implemented within the time frame.
Adam says much more needs to be done to implement the provision on transitional justice and the safe return of IDPs and refugees to their villages. For VOA News, I'm Michael Atit in Khartoum.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, Nigeria embarks on mass vaccinations. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you offer advice to your siblings? If so, what kind of advice?
Yes, I advise my siblings. I tell them to be respectful to everybody, old and young alike.
Yes, I advise my siblings. I tell them not to waste money, but to be careful in the way they handle money. I also tell them to give to people who are in need.
Hard work always pays, and if you work hard, at the end you realize something that you didn't expect. So that's the single piece of advice that I offer to my siblings.
I always tell them to they work hard in school. Then, of course, they should be open in case they want anything or lack anything.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. And in our Tuesday's health segment, we take a look at efforts by Nigerian officials to keep COVID-19 Delta variant from spreading in the country. Nigeria begins a second phase of nationwide coronavirus vaccinations Tuesday amid an upsurge in cases of the Delta variant. Nigeria, Africa's most populous nation, aims to vaccinate at least 40% of its more than 200 million people by the end of the year, but at the current rate, is falling short. For VOA News, Timothy Obiazu reports from Abuja. Still on COVID, Malawi's President Lazarus Chikwera has urged Southern African leaders to redouble efforts to combat the coronavirus pandemic and called on wealthy nations to stop hoarding vaccine. He was speaking at the annual summit of the 16-member South African Development Community in Malawi's capital Lilongwe. The two-day meeting aims to promote trade and building a regional defense force after its first deployment to fight insurgents in Mozambique. For VOA News, Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Speaking during the televised function Tuesday, President Lazarus Chakwera, who is also SADC's current chairperson, said it was concerning that despite the devastating social and economic impact of the COVID-19, wealthy nations continue hoarding vaccine. Statistics show that less than 2% of Africa's population is fully vaccinated. That is low compared with the rest of the world. Chakwera blamed it on inequalities and disparities in the distribution and production of COVID-19 vaccine. He said it is symptomatic of an old geopolitical framework that regards some human lives as more worthy of saving than others.
Our message to those nations that promote and perpetuate this framework is simple. You are using a tired and failed formula. African countries are full members of the global community, period. As such, for the sake of the dignity of all human beings everywhere, we as Africans have a moral duty to refuse to be treated as second-class citizens.
Chakwera said that thinking would make it difficult for the region to reach herd immunity and reduce high infection rates. Dr. Vera Songwe is Executive Secretary of the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa. She says the Africa Vaccines Acquisition Task Team, put together by South African President Cyril Ramaphosa, has procured 400 million doses of the Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine for the continent. Songwe also said Africa needs to do more than just procure vaccine.
We also need to produce on the continent. The SADC region is demonstrating its capacity to do that by starting in South Africa with the production of vaccines in South Africa. This is, for us as a continent, I think, a first demonstration that Africa working together, coming together, can effectively build forward better sustainably in the crisis.
The summit also aims to promote regional trade and building a regional defense force after its first deployment to fight insurgents in Mozambique's Cabo Delgado province. Speaking through a translator, Mozambican President Philip Nyusi thanked the SADC for authorizing the deployment.
We congratulate countries of the region for the brotherhood and prompt solidarity demonstrated by the deployment of SADC standby force capabilities in the spirit of the SADC Mutual Defense Pact, which was launched on the 9th of August 2021 in Pemba City.
Nyusi said he would speak more on the issue during a closed-door session. The summit is expected to end Wednesday when a communique on resolutions will be read. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta, Malawi.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Modu. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we can all help fight the corona pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and nose when we are in crowded places or areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Ugandan human rights activists have welcomed President Yoweri Museveni's condemnation of torturing suspects held in custody. But rights groups say they are skeptical whether Museveni will back his words with persecution of security forces accused of abuse. For VOA News, Alima Thumani reports from the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
Describing his security officers as lazy, President Yoweri Museveni said in a televised address Saturday night that he wanted to discuss human rights concerns. Museveni warned security forces against barking at or beating suspects, detaining suspects for long periods in jail, and deporting foreigners without trial, saying it disadvantages the country. He asked for videos to be played of suspects arrested in the trial of the attempted assassination of former Chief of Defense Forces General Edward Katumba Wamala. One video showed a suspect sobbing in court, talking about his alleged torture. He says, they beat me with all kinds of canes. I wouldn't know what they used to beat me with. He says, the situation makes you say things you shouldn't be saying because it is so hard. Other videos showed graphic images of people allegedly tortured by security forces, including a man with raw wounds on his back, another one limping out of court, and another of a police officer running after a woman and beating her repeatedly. Museveni blamed the torture on acts of indiscipline by individual officers and the failure of senior commanders to instruct junior officers on what shouldn't and should be done. According to Museveni, these abominable acts damage the legitimacy, history, and achievements of the National Resistance Army that brought him to power and the ruling National Resistance Movement Party.
Beating captives is wrong. Why? You undermine your case in court when the court discovers that you got information through torture. Secondly, on account of beating, somebody may admit what is not true, torture, assassination, etc., are used by lazy people that are not ready to do more work using the gaps in the stories of the criminals if they are telling lies.
Museveni promised to eliminate such torture and beatings and use the law to uproot the culture of reactionary behavior in the armed forces. However, Livingstone Sewanyana, executive director of the Foundation for Human Rights Initiative, expressed doubt that Museveni's words will be followed up with real change. He says Museveni often changes the rules to suit his goals, leaving questions as to his sincerity and commitment to what he says.
Seems to be a class of people who are increasingly being untouchable, and the president needs them for his political survival. So much as he comes out as strong with warnings, he definitely does not live to his words. And the way politics is played here, it is all about who has the president here.
Samuel Herbert Nsubuga is CEO of a non-government organization, the African Center for the Treatment and Rehabilitation of Torture Victims. He tells VOA that due to the COVID-19 pandemic, they have not had access to any prison facilities. But he says the situation of torture in the country is prevalent and the president needs to act.
But the issue is those images he showed. I would like those people who did that to the suspects be prosecuted in the courts of law. There is that gap which we really want the justice institutions to fill.
So Anyana insists Museveni's pronouncement was triggered by the need to restore the country's image and the realization that torture has a negative impact on the economy. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala, Uganda.
Let us know what you think about this show. Our WhatsApp number is +12026308011. We reserve the right to read brief comments from you every Friday. That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday. We now leave you with some traditional Acholi song from Eastern Equatorial State. Listening to some traditional Acholi song from Eastern Equatorial State. I'm John Tanza. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19, because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.